Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. District judge in Southern Idaho throws out lawsuit against Idaho's anti-student voter suppression law. Washington minimum wage to increase to $16.28 after the new year. And Spokane County prosecutor says, and Spokane County Sheriff's Office, along with Spokane Police, want judge to recuse himself for calling out systemic racism, saying that's anti-police bias. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. Taking a look at local and regional news, an Ada County judge has ruled Idaho's new voter suppression law targeting students is constitutional because it does not completely take away students' right to vote. The Idaho legislature this year passed House Bills 124 and 340, which prevent the use of student IDs for voter registration, but required the Idaho Transportation Department to provide free IDs to those who don't have driver's licenses. The Boise-based youth voting rights group Babe Votes challenged the law in court, and the Idaho Secretary of State's office sought a declaratory judgment in the case. Fourth District Judge Samuel Hoagland granted the declaratory judgment Monday, saying the laws do not violate the Equal Protection Clause of the Idaho Constitution. Referring to the right to vote as suffrage, Hoagland wrote in his decision, "The challenged legislation places conditions on the right to suffrage rather than directly removing the ability of a particular classification to vote. While a certain classification, age, appears to be more affected than other classifications, the condition is not immediately invalidated, nor does the condition make it impossible, let alone overly burdensome, for those in the classification to continue to exercise the right of suffrage. Students are not a protected class. Moreover, not every student is a young person, and not every young person of voting age is a student. The removal of student identification as means for registering to vote and identifying oneself at the polls is not discriminatory, and it has a clear relationship to the stated purposes of House Bill 124 and 340. The removal of student identification cards as permissible means of identification at the polls or for voter registration under HB 124 and HB 340 does not unduly burden voters. There are other valid and free means to identify oneself at the polls and for voter registration." The voter suppression law against students is part of an effort by the far right to limit the number of people voting against their agenda, and is notable because Idaho law now lists the forms of identification allowed for voter registration and purposely includes concealed weapons licenses and military IDs, whose carriers are more likely to vote for the extremist right wing. The legislature passed other voter suppression laws this past session, including one requiring proof of citizenship for registration. Those laws are so onerous that some of the state's voter registration drive organizations stopped their registration drives July 1st. The far right in the Idaho legislature has pushed the false claim that voter fraud is rampant, which dovetails with the widespread conspiracy theory that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Trump. Supporters of the student voter suppression bill, such as Republican Senator Scott Herndon of Sagal, who sponsored the bill in the Senate, also said student IDs often lack birth dates and security features such as proof of address and proof of citizenship. Senator Herndon said during testimony on the bill, "The reason that we again want to get rid of the student ID is because we cannot have as much assurance through that method of identification that the voter standing at the poll to vote is who they say they are." Boise School Board member Shiva Rajbandari, a founding member of Babe Votes, told a House committee during testimony in early March if the lawmakers were so concerned about the security of student IDs, they would have been trying to pass a law that requires student IDs to have verification features such as birth dates.
My name is Shiva Rajmandari. I'm 18 years old. I've served as a chief judge in Ada County elections 4 times, and I voted for the first time in a statewide election last November. I'm also one of the leaders of Bay Vote, a nonprofit, nonpartisan voter advocacy organization, and I'm speaking today in opposition to House Bill 54. I believe that all Idaho citizens deserve to make their voice heard at the ballot box. This bill would make it so that some people cannot vote. When the Honorable Representative introduced this legislation, she said that Oregonians were crossing the border to vote in Idaho elections. Mr. Chairman, committee, that's not true. There's no widespread voter fraud in Idaho. Very rarely there are isolated incidents. When that happens, we have redundancies in place just so that we catch it every single time. The lie that people are voting fraudulently in our state is dangerous and is a threat to the legitimacy of every single legislator in this building. I also want to call your attention to another inaccuracy in the bill, and that's the fiscal impact. If we made it so that people without IDs can't vote, we'd need to provide everyone with a free ID. Currently, the cheapest state-issued ID, as May said, is $10. Hence, this bill would violate the 24th Amendment, and that's several $1 million in court fees, plus the cost of providing free real IDs to every Idaho citizen. Finally, I want to address the point that less than 100 people voted with their student ID last year. Here's the deal. In 2020, we saw the biggest turnout ever in Idaho's elections. That year, still, 203,809 registered voters didn't vote, and an additional about 200,000 people who were eligible weren't registered to vote, so they didn't vote as well. When making policies about how people can vote, this body cannot just consider the people who do vote. You have a duty to ensure that everyone who is eligible is able to vote, and there are an awful lot of people whose only government-issued photo ID is their student ID. So making it especially hard for those people to vote is unconstitutional and unethical. For those reasons, this legislation is poorly written, and I urge you to please vote no. I'll stand for any questions about our voting system or how this legislation adversely affects young folks.
Thank you, Shiva. Are there questions for Shiva? Seeing none, thank you for your... Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I got glasses, and I can hardly see you. Okay, go ahead. Representative Barbieri.
Shiva. When I was in high school, I was taught that Russia required everyone to vote. Are you advocating that we have some requirement that everyone should vote?
Shiva?
Certainly not. I think that everybody who is eligible should be able to vote. And so when we just consider the people who do vote, considering that our voter turnout is, what, less than 60% in most elections, we're forgetting that 40% of people who aren't voting but still have that right to vote. And I think... You know, the point about student IDs being different in every school is a good point. But that's something the committee can consider to strengthen the validity of student IDs, right? We can put date of birth on student IDs. That'd be a great bill. But I think banning student IDs outright as a form of ID disenfranchises a lot of folks and spreads the wrong message that our elections aren't secure when, in fact, they are. You know, student IDs are taken for I-9s. They're taken for W-2s. So the federal government is you're allowed to use student IDs, and I don't see why we'd want to invalidate that here in the state. I think one point that comes up too is, well, what if someone, you could print out a student ID at your house and you come in and use that at the polling place. Well, to register same day to vote, you just need photo ID and proof of address, and so student ID actually qualifies. So if you ban student ID as a form of identification, but you're still allowing it for same day registration, you know, that's kind of creates some issues there. But the thing is that we have a voter registry, right? You have to register to vote. And so it's not like random people are coming in and voting with their student ID. These are people who live in the neighborhood, right? Precincts are groups of 2,000 voters, and they're in the poll book. And as a poll worker, when you go in and you look up someone's student ID, they provide you the student ID, you would go and you look it up, you look up their name, and it comes up. And typically, there's just one person. If it's a common name, John Smith, sure, maybe there's 5 people, but only one of them is 18. You know, you can very easily verify that person is who they say they are. If someone else comes in and then says that they're that exact same person, then right there you know that there's voter fraud being committed. One of them is lying, right? And because we know, because we can check that every time, we know that there is not voter fraud being committed because we're not having that problem, right? We're not having people vote with one idea and then have someone else come in and say they're the same person, because we would know if that happened. Same thing with when we do our post-election audits. You know, we check, oh, did someone die 2 days before the election and then vote? Well, then we know that there's voter fraud committed. And guess what? It didn't happen. That's not something that we're seeing in our state. That's not something that we're seeing across the country. And so the sense that our elections are insecure, it is flawed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, yes. So I'll give you another opportunity to continue your pontification. So you're suggesting
I think he's able to
speak his mind, and that's what we're doing.
It's not pontification. He was answering your question.
Well,
now, did he get very verbose like some of us do as political leaders? Yeah, he's
learning.
He's good with words just like we are. So you're fine. You continue.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. So I'm hearing you suggest that it's absolutely impossible for fraud to be committed in our voters.
I'm not suggesting that. No.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman.
Yep.
Representative Barbieri. There are isolated incidents of voter fraud. One vote, maybe, in an election once every 20 years. Secretary of State's here. You could ask him about that. Every time that happens, we catch it. And in statute, there are provisions that make that a felony, right? You do go to jail when you commit voter fraud. The people who are impacted, but it's not students committing voter fraud. It's the people who are impacted by this bill are going to be students whose only form of government issued ID is student ID. And that's why it's so important to allow them to vote.
Thank you. Representative Young and then Representative Alfieri. Just bear in mind, we've got to be on the floor in 25 minutes. I've got still about six people to get through testimony and then wrapping it up. So,
okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Shiva, welcome to the committee today.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Just a quick question. It sounds like cost is part of the objective here. You would like it to not cost so much. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are about why it costs more to get a state-issued ID as opposed to a student ID.
Well,
Shiva?
So it's not that it shouldn't cost so much. It should cost nothing, right? Making it cost money to vote would be implementing a poll tax. The reason, obviously, state-issued IDs are more secure, right? That's true. Still, we have fake IDs, right? And we know that there's probably lots of people in your district who have fake IDs. So that's not foolproof. No form of identification is. The reason that student IDs are free and the reason that voter ID is kind of the same reason that voter ID should be free. It's that education is something that's free in our state. And so every student is provided with a student ID card. Now, if the state wants to fund schools to give them more resources to make those student IDs more secure, I think that'd be great. I think that would help protect more students so that people can't enter our buildings with, you know, if they're not who they say they are. But again, that's not something that we're seeing in the state. Just like we're not seeing people voting with student IDs committing fraud.
That was Boise School Board member and a founding member of Babe Votes, Shiva Rajbhandari, who was testifying to an Idaho House committee in Boise in March. He was 18 years old at the time. Democratic Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise debated against the bill on the Senate floor. Wintrow said, "I want to communicate to our students that they are valued and that they should be engaged in the government process. And I do not want to send any kind of message of value that we don't want them at the polls. And I think that does communicate a message." After Judge Hoagland's decision Monday this week, Republican Secretary of State Phil McGrane wrote in a press release, "We are grateful for the successful resolution of this case. Voter registration is an important first step to being engaged in the democratic process. This legislation helped address inconsistencies in our law in an effort to build confidence in Idaho's elections. I firmly believe that ensuring access to voting and maintaining security in elections are not conflicting goals. We have a great elections system here in Idaho, and it was great to see that affirmed in this case."
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
KRFP, Moscow.
We have some additional coverage of Saturday's events on the Snake River at Hell's Gate State Park in Lewiston, in which Northwest Tribes and Nimiipuu Protecting the Environment launched numerous canoes and kayaks to display a giant 40-foot-long Free the Snake banner in the river. During the smudging ceremony that preceded the flotilla, Julian Matthews of Nimiipuu Protecting the Environment spoke about the economic factors that impact the continued existence of the four lower Snake River dams that are causing salmon runs to decline towards extinction.
The main reason I'm doing this now is because, like with those kids we work with every Wednesday, a lot of them are in estuary, some are not, but I don't want to have them not be able to take salmon from this river at all 20 years from now. So that's my big push, and so that's why I appreciate everyone's support that came here today. And just remember that we still want to breach the dams. It's not over just because Joe Biden signed some agreement to see. I don't want money, I want fish. I want salmon. That's what we want. They throw money at these things. You know, I live in Pullman. It's wheat. They say they're produce the most wheat in any county in the U.S. And where does it go? Down to Lewiston or to other ports, and they ship it on the barges down to Portland. They sell it overseas, and we're footing the bill for that. Any types of repairs to the locks, turbines, etc. Taxpayers are paying it, and to me, we're not really getting a lot of benefit. But the main thing is the lack of salmon.
That was Julian Matthews of Nimiipuu Protecting the Environment. KRFP citizen journalist Rhea Kumar spoke with lifelong subsistence farmer, fisherman, and former smoke jumper Steve Paulson, who is a board member of the Moscow-based Friends of the Clearwater. Paulson said the Snake River dams are temporary.
They're earth dams. They're just piles of dirt in the river. That's all they are. They're not going to last forever. And that's the reason it's finally reached this point, is because the people that own that dam, those dams, Bonneville Power or Northwest Power, whoever it is, they've realized that the maintenance is due on those earth-filled dams now, and they don't want them anymore.
So if they don't want them, do you think that it's likely that we'll be able to get the dams breached?
It's only a matter of time. The maintenance that's due right now on those dams is more expensive than all the money that they have made on them so far.
Well, then why do you think people even keep the dams there?
Big industry. You've got a lot of wheat from all. This is the closest port to Montana, so at least western Montana. So there's a lot of wheat that people want to come to this spot. It's the quickest place. All this Palouse area and all of western Montana, they want the wheat to come down through. And then there's also the barge industries. Right now they're bringing they're able to bring uncountable tons of, fuel oil and coal and whatever they want to Lewiston for almost free on a barge. And they want to continue that. And they have to have, and they can't run barges on a free snake. Well, they could, but not like they do now. Not, 20 billion tons of grain going down the river in one little boat. In the old days they did it, but they were all littler boats. They were steam wheelers. They were bringing stuff into Lewiston in 1860s, but it was seasonal, and they got stuck a lot.
Yeah.
But they did it.
That was Steve Paulson of Friends of the Clearwater at the Free the Snake Flotilla at Hell's Gate State Park in Lewiston Saturday. You can hear more coverage of the flotilla on the Rude Awakening radio show here on KRFP tonight at 7:30 p.m. A Division III Court of Appeals judge in Spokane County has declined to recuse himself after Spokane County Prosecutor Larry Haskell called for recusal because he said the judge's unpublished opinion calling out systemic racism in a now overturned case amounts to bias against law enforcement. Spokane County Sheriff John Knowles and Spokane City Police Chief Craig Meidel have joined in, calling Judge George Fearing's opinion biased and calling for him to recuse himself. Judge Fearing is the Division III Court of Appeals Chief Judge. The Spokesman Review reports County Chief Criminal Deputy Prosecutor Preston McClellan, under County Prosecutor Larry Haskell, wrote in an email, Judge Fearing has decided that despite his obvious bias and willingness to insert his personal opinions about law enforcement and prosecutors into his decision-making, the rules of judicial conduct do not require him to remove himself from criminal cases. If you read his letter, he clearly believes himself too enlightened to be held responsible for the words he wrote about my office, law enforcement, and this community as a whole. His 20-page letter does nothing to restore confidence that any deputy prosecutor or law enforcement officer in this community can have in a fair hearing in front of them. A 3-judge panel had voted 2-1 to dismiss a case involving an arrest by 2 county sheriff's department deputies who were accused of assault. Fearing was the one dissenting judge and wrote about systemic racism in the justice and law enforcement systems in Spokane County. Judge Fearing said he was following a Washington Supreme Court directive that judges address systemic racism in their work in the judiciary. The NAACP Spokane branch wrote in a comment about the case, "You cannot fight what you cannot name, and we applaud Judge Fearing's bravery and honesty in accurately identifying and detailing the systemic racism present in the Vele case, a painful fact that we in our community are all too familiar with." The Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane, the Spokane Community Against Racism, or SCAR, and the United Universalist Church of Spokane also submitted letters opposing Fearing's recusal. Spokane Police Chief Craig Meidel and Spokane County Sheriff John Knowles wrote that they believe Fearing violated the Code of Judicial Conduct. Sheriff Knowles wrote, "Judge Fearing is so blinded by his bias that his opinion crosses the threshold into activism against law enforcement and court officers who all took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the State of Washington and the United States of America. These are the actions of a politician, not a judge." Fearing wrote in his recent ruling that the prosecutor's office and law enforcement showed disdain for both the Washington Supreme Court's open letter on racism and similar letters from the Spokane County Superior Court. Fearing wrote, "A Washington judge should not disqualify himself from criminal cases because of striving to fulfill the instructions of the Washington Supreme Court." However, Fearing will be recusing himself from cases that rely on testimony from Spokane County Deputy Sheriff Clay Hilton because Hilton left him an angry voicemail calling Fearing woke and included derogatory comments about Spokane's African-American community being criminals. Hilton also says he intends to sue Fearing. Fearing wrote about that, "I hold no will towards Deputy Hilton, but have concern about his anger, inability to reflect on his behavior, and insistence on retaliation. I lack confidence in his credibility." Judge Fearing also plans to recuse himself in cases where Larry and Leslie Haskell are named as parties. The Moscow City Council voted 6-0 last night to repeal a 1988 ordinance authorizing the city to collect a street light fee from residents because of doubts about the city's legal authority to do so. City Supervisor Bill Belknap explained further.
Our research revealed that several cities had ceased collection of streetlight fees after having their fees challenged over the last 5 to 10 years. There really are only a handful of cities in Idaho that do continue to collect it. Those include Coeur d'Alene, Plummer, Grangeville, and a few others, but very few do. Staff believes that it would be prudent to cease the collection of these fees until there is clear legislative or judicial actions to provide our authority to charge those fees. So we have prepared an ordinance that would repeal Chapter 10 of Title 5, which is the section of city code that established the fee back in 1988. Upon passage of the proposed ordinance, the city would then cease collecting the street fee for this fiscal year beginning October 1st, which would be billed in November.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap. The council also voted separately to amend the fiscal year 2024 fee resolution to reflect that the city will no longer collect the streetlight fee from residents. The Washington Department of Labor and Industries announced the state's minimum wage will increase from the current rate of $15.74 per hour to $16.28 an hour January 1st. Labor and Industries Department officials say the minimum wage is based on calculations from the federal government's estimations of price increases. The minimum wage applies to workers over 16 years. Workers who are 14 and 15 years old are eligible to get paid 85% of the hourly minimum wage, or $13.84 per hour. According to the Seattle Times, the increase reflects the 3.37% rise in consumer costs, including housing, food, medical care, and other expenses listed in the Consumer Price Index. Washington's minimum wage is the highest in the country. Cities in Washington have the freedom to increase the minimum wage higher. The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 an hour since 2009. Labor and Industries says for 2024, salaried workers who are exempted from overtime pay will earn a minimum of $67,724 a year, double the minimum of a full-time worker. For 3 years, Labor and Industries has incrementally raised overtime pay rates. Overtime will reach 2.5 times the regular pay rate in 2028, depending on the size of the business. Minimum pay rates for rideshare drivers also goes into effect in January. The Okanagan County Sheriff's Office reported one person died yesterday in an airplane crash in the Methow Valley area southeast of Twisp. According to the Wenatchee World, in a Facebook post, the sheriff's office said the crash occurred around 10:30 yesterday morning. The pilot was the sole occupant of the plane. The National Transportation Safety Board and the Federal Aviation Administration, the Okanagan County Sheriff's Department, Search and Rescue, the Arrow Methow Rescue Service, and other area first responders are investigating the crash. Various rescuers, including Idaho County Sheriff's deputies, ambulance workers, and a few hunters, responded to a bow hunting injury to a woman who fell and broke her leg while she was hunting last weekend. According to the Lewiston Tribune, an Idaho County Sheriff's Office news release said the accident took place in the Glade Creek area, about 200 yards off a trail, about 2.5 miles off U.S. Highway 12 during a heavy rainstorm. Two county deputies, Kuski ambulance workers, and three hunters carried the unnamed woman to the trail so she could be wheeled to the ambulance and taken to a local hospital. The Idaho County Sheriff's Department thanked everyone who helped carry the woman out of the forest and for their quick response to someone in need. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area. Partly cloudy tonight, low 44, patchy fog after 9 p.m. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high 63, patchy fog before 9 a.m. Mostly clear Wednesday night, patchy fog after midnight, low 42. And clear skies Thursday through Sunday, with highs 68 Thursday, 70 Friday, and 72 Saturday and Sunday. Lows 40 Thursday night, 44 Friday night, and 47 Saturday night. Currently 57 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Coming up next, Flashpoints at 7:30. Rude Awakening is on the air live in the studios here at KRFP, so stay tuned for that. KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is supported in part by Idaho AFL-CIO, dedicated to representing the interests of working people at the state and local level. KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors for helping make this programming possible.